If you're a marathon runner, are you making these four mistakes in your nutrition plan? Welcome to the Inside Sports Nutrition Podcast, your source for all things sports nutrition related. This show is hosted by myself, Bob Sibahar, and my awesome co-host, Dina Griffin. We are both registered dietitians who are board certified specialists in sports dietetics with combined professional experience exceeding 40 years. We are here to translate nutrition and sports science research to real life and give you some awesome interviews with a variety of experts so you can enhance your knowledge to optimize your health, fitness, and athletic performance. Now, on today's episode number 123, it is marathon season, and Dina and I sit down to discuss the four most common nutrient timing mistakes that marathon runners make. Now, this is an interesting one because some are quite obvious and some are not. So you're going to definitely want to tune in to this episode, especially if you're running, training for a marathon or even a half marathon, right? Because it still kind of upholds for the most part. Now, before we do get to the show today, for all of you health professionals who provide nutrition coaching services to individuals, if you would like to enhance and improve your nutrition philosophy, develop nutrition systems, and participate in a mentorship program with me, head on over to the Energy Performance website, energperformance.com, click on Metabolic Efficiency Training, and you can learn more about my Metabolic Efficiency Training Specialist Certification and Mentorship Program. It has been in existence since 2012, and I have just love teaching health professionals more about nutrition, but also about business strategies and creating new revenue. Okay, let's head on to the episode.
Well, good morning, Bob. It is a super fun conversation we're going to have today on one of our favorite topics, which is we're going to call it marathon nutrient timing and looking at some hydration things. But you and I have seen a number of issues that have happened with our marathoners, things that we know of our people in training for even spring marathons, but honestly, it doesn't matter time of year. But what we're going to do today is go over four common mistakes that we see our marathoners make in training for race day.
Yeah, and 'tis the season, right? Because everyone's like in training for these spring marathons, getting their season ready. They're like, oh my gosh. And you know, if you're living in a colder, you know, environment, you're trying to get out more. Like there's so many things going on right now, but this is like it. This is the start of the marathon season. And you know, like you said, Dee, we have so many challenges that athletes come to us presenting us with. And you know, we have tried to kind of collate it all into our top four challenges.
Yes.
So let's roll through them because, you know, listeners, if you're running a marathon, it's no joke, right? A marathon is not easy for a lot of people. And especially if you just come from a 5K or 10K or even a half marathon, you're talking like double the distance. And there's a lot of things you need to think about nutritionally. And let me just say this, Dee, that you can't get away with in a marathon that maybe you could get away with in a half marathon. And that's the big difference here, right?
Totally, Bob. You know what? One of the things that is top that I think is undervalued, underappreciated is the fluid component. So hydration. And what I'm thinking of here, Bob, and things that we've seen before here in this context is, especially for spring marathons, depending where you live, where you just mentioned it might be a little colder out when we're training. And we think about fueling a little, maybe, but we're forgetting the fluid piece. And so one area here in terms of a mistake is thinking that you can kind of get away with zero fluids in your training runs, or even that you could, this notion of like train your body to not need fluids. Do you want to take that one, Bob, and kind of expand on it?
Yeah, I've got quite a bit of experience in this one because that was me years and years and years ago. Because, you know, and I would boast, I'd say, hey, you know, I went out for a 2-hour run, carried nothing with me. And I was kind of, I wore my badge of honor, like, yes.
Oh, yeah.
And then, you know, Regarding performance, I mean, you can define performance in different ways. And obviously it depends on the environment and the terrain you're on, if you're on trails, on road, whatever. But you know what I felt, just to bring that in, is I felt pretty lousy towards the end. And I'm like, oh no, I'm just tired. It's a longer run, like whatever. But what really got me, Dee, was that like I felt like I just was ran over by a train when I got home, and it lasted for a good 24 to 36 hours. And these are early in my endurance days. I'm scratching my head like, what's going on? Do I just need to eat more? And you know what it was? It was because I was constantly dehydrated. And like, listeners, we get it. If you're running a marathon, the last thing we want to do running a marathon is carry a lot of fluid. Listen, yeah. We don't. And the second thing we don't want is for our stomach to slosh. Like, that's the worst feeling in the world, right? So I get it. Both Dee and I, like, we empathize with you. We know what's going on. But we also know that dehydrating on purpose can really lead down a bad path, not only during the marathon. Indeed, this is sometimes I think of like during the marathon or during training, but I'm trying to look at beyond that, right? Especially in a training plan where, you know, our listeners are maybe spending 3 to 9 months training for a marathon, training day after day after day, week after week after week. It compounds, right? So if you're dehydrated today and you go for a run and you're not rehydrating properly, tomorrow's training session is not going to be good. So it just compounds one day after the other.
Oh my God, that's such a good point, Bob. That cumulative effect on recovery is going to be compromised. And then what that's going to do to your couple days out or the whole week, you know, or the little microcycle that you're in. And so that notion, I just not appreciated, maybe not known by many, the role of fluids in recovery. And that doesn't start like by pounding a whole bunch of plain water after our sessions. So we're needing to put some attention in that pre-run window of time if we can, or at least, you know, in the run, getting in some fluids. And then, of course, that was a very general statement, like getting in some, but trying to figure out our own individual needs would be kind of that next step.
Yeah. Well, and think about this, like the research tells us the fluid recommendations we should consume after training, after a run, is 16 to 24 ounces of fluid for every pound of weight that you lose.
Mm-hmm.
Did I say that correctly? Yes,
I think so.
Correctly.
Yeah.
So let's say I drop 2 pounds in a 2 hour run. Actually, I could drop 2 pounds on a 1 hour run. Then I would need, do the math, Dee, 32 to 48 ounces. Do you know, like that's a liter to a liter and a half. That's a lot of fluid. So here's the thing, listeners, this is what we're getting at. What you drink before, especially before and then during, will decrease your needs after. And that's what I try to put more emphasis on, is like pre-hydrating before your run and during your run, you know, being spot on with what you need to minimize the amount of fluid you need to replace, because none of us want to consume that much fluid afterwards.
So true, Bob. And, you know, just one other angle here is thinking of race day. Mm-hmm. So if I'm in Colorado, but I'm going to go race in Florida, where it's going to be significantly more humid, more warm in temperatures. And if I'm not practicing this fluid intake strategy, race day is going to be tough.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Well, and because you need to train your body somewhat, right? And
yeah.
I feel like you need to train your brain too. And back to my example, like I just, you know, back in the days, I just spent no time doing that. So nowadays, like I literally, even if it's a 1 hour run, I will carry fluid with me. So I get in the habit of taking sips. I may not need fluid in a 1 hour run, but I'm trying to build the habit.
Yes.
And that is, I think, the crucial piece of the puzzle. And here's the thing too, like I hate carrying things with me. I do. Like I don't like wearing a pack or handhelds or whatever, but here's the thing you guys can do, listeners, is, you know, pick your course, right? I do this all the time. Pick your course, drop a water bottle. If you're doing an out and back or something, you can stash a water bottle here or there. And then, you know, at least you'll have some fluid along the way, or you can do loops. So it doesn't have to be difficult, is what I'm saying.
Really? I mean, the benefits you're going to yield on race day outweigh the little bit of hassle to figure that out.
Exactly.
It's reminding me of our number two on our list, Bob, related to fluids, is the electrolyte pee.
Oh, gosh.
Mistake number two is misuse.
Yes.
Of electrolyte products.
Yeah, and that can go either way, right? Misuse could be not using any or too few or using too many, right? And you know, the jury is still out in terms of the consensus in research. And it depends on who you talk to in real life from the practitioner. Some say yes, low. Some say high. Some say none. So, I mean, look at all the sport nutrition products out there. I mean, even electrolyte supplements will range anywhere between about 150 milligrams of sodium only all the way up to 1,000 or more milligrams. So like what gives? Well, I think both of us share the same idea here, Dina, is we need electrolytes. However, when it comes to the quantity, we should probably have you guys do a little measurement first, right? So we are really big on sweat rate testing. So measuring your body weight before and after a run, measure it nude, so you can see how many pounds of fluid you lose in that run. And also sweat sodium concentration testing, which is actually a great test. Of course, we're biased, but it's a one and done test. You have it done once in your lifetime. You never have to do it again, but that'll give you the amount of sodium that your body loses in sweat. So you can get more specific in how many milligrams of sodium you actually need. And Dean, I kind of went back and forth. I dropped two things in there, electrolytes and sodium. What do we need to talk about with like electrolytes in general? Because I think a lot of our listeners might get confused. They're like, did Bob say sodium or electrolytes? Like, what's the difference? Right. What are we talking about?
Well, great point, Bob. Sodium's the key electrolyte that if we are replenishing some of our electrolytes that we lose in sweat, sodium's going to be the key, you know, main one that we want to look at. So it's not potassium in coconut water or calcium or magnesium so much. It's the sodium, since that's the electrolyte we lose the most of in our sweat. And then to your point, knowing our own individual sweat sodium concentration per liter of sweat in conjunction with the fluids that we lose in various training conditions, then it's just a more of a specific game plan for that fluid and hydration or electrolyte intake plan or sodium intake plan. So it's that dialing in of more specificity to our individual physiology.
Yeah. And I think I'll go on the stand saying, I do believe that all marathoners need to consume electrolytes. Absolutely. Sodium being the top one. It's just, you know, the next layer of the onion is, well, how much though? And that's where we kind of waver, because we don't know you, the individual. We don't know your sweat rate. We don't know your sweat sodium concentration. But I think both of us stand, you know, behind the statement of, yes, you do need to consume electrolytes, specifically sodium, during most training and probably your racing also, which kind of lends to the whole fluid thing that we just discussed, right?
Definitely, Bob. But this is an area, making it part of training is this discovery of our needs fluid and electrolyte wise, so that we're preventing race day gut bombs or hyponatremia, drinking way too much water, all these things affecting performance. So that reminds me here, kind of tying into to mistake number three, Bob, is like during our runs, what is the fueling that's happening? So many marathoners are not practicing what they're going to consume on race day soon enough in training. And so there's this lack of attention to fueling, and we can go in a number of areas here in terms of this big mistake number three.
Yeah, it's kind of, in my mind, it's kind of come full circle. I mean, I've been doing this for decades, D, and the full circle is from the, oh, well, if you're really fast marathoner, you don't need to consume anything. And now what do we see from our elite fast marathoners? They're trying to like really consume a lot of carbohydrates and calories per hour. And then it's also been the like, oh, if you're going to be out there a little bit longer, you may need not, you know, this is the past. You may not need a lot because you're going slower and maybe you're utilizing more fat as for energy. And yeah, well, all that's true. Your body still needs energy. Like you're still burning calories. And this is a huge mistake. I think a lot of people make these days is they just think, I don't need to consume anything because it's only a 2-hour run. It's only a 3-hour run. It's only a 45 minute, like whatever it is, right? But there are so many ways to approach this. One, I would say, if I could put a percentage on this, I would say 80 to 90% of our listeners need to consume some type of calories during training runs for various purposes, right? So maybe it's like the fluid. Maybe they don't need a lot of it during a 2-hour run, like that sugar is what I'm talking about, those carbohydrates, but maybe it's going to help them recover afterwards, which is going to help tomorrow's run or strength or cross training or whatever. So I think we always need to think of the cumulative effects here also. And In addition to that, I'll give you your spotlight here in a second, Deanna, but I'm on a soapbox. In addition to that, you want to train your body. You want to train your gut to be able to assimilate calories during a run. So if that's your plan on marathon day, you don't have this huge gut bomb all of a sudden at mile 10 and you're like, oh my gosh, I can't eat anything anymore. I can't consume anything. Well, it's because you didn't do it in training, right? So I guess let's rewind this whole thing, Deanna. How important are calories during running? Like, do our listeners need to consume calories? And really, I'm talking about carbohydrates during training runs.
Well, the golden question.
It is. That's why I set you up with this one.
You have 2 more hours. No, yeah. I'm just kidding. But yeah, we have to think about context. I mean, I'm nervous to say yes or no, right? Because we have to say, well, what is the goal of that training run? Is it a quality run? Is it a 25-minute shakeout run?
Yeah.
Is it race simulation? What's the duration? What else is going on in that training day? Da-da-da-da-da. I would say, generally, this is where some of us might fall off, though, is that we're maybe under fueling those longer runs, or, you know, not fueling enough before the run for in advance of the run, if that makes sense.
Exactly.
So I know you and I have been through the experiments, Bob. You know, you've done some marathon runs with 0 calories, I think, back, right?
Right, and right.
I've had marathons with like 60 calories an hour. It's like, well, okay, we can under fuel, we could call it, or test our body's limits. But if we're looking for maximum performance, maybe there's that benefit then to taking in more calories, finding our sweet spot. It doesn't mean that it's necessarily 400 calories per hour from simple sugars, but it could be, again, this threshold that we each discover that supports blood glucose level, cognition, our individual performance goal.
Yeah. And there's a lot of experimentation there, isn't there, Deanna? I mean, and of course you can have a metabolic efficiency test done, and that will take a lot of this experimentation out and shorten your learning curve like crazy. But I do want to comment on something, because I, you know, that you said, Deanna, and I have done really long runs, marathon training runs with no calories.
Yeah.
But again, I think you need to put that in context.
Totally.
Right? Like that
totally.
Wasn't my goal. And it kind of reminds me, you know, I'm training for some ultra stuff right now, not marathon, but ultra. And, you know, I went for a 2+ hour run this past weekend and consumed 0 calories also. But context says this. I actually had a really good lunch about an hour before I left. I also had a UCAN energy bar about 10 minutes before I left. So the context is, I knew that I was fueled for that 2+ hour run. And while I did have energy on me, like I carried it with me just in case, I knew that my pre-fueling was pretty spot on, that all I needed during was water and electrolytes. So that's the context. But had I not eaten that lunch or that UCAN energy bar, then I would be really, really focused on hitting a certain amount of grams of carbohydrate or calorie per hour because I was not fed well before the run. So I think that's where a lot of our listeners kind of get confused. And let's put it in marathon context. What runner wants to have anything jostling around in the gut when they run? None. Right?
Yeah. I didn't hear anyone say, heck yes, me. So,
and that's why they're scared of it, right?
Yeah. But again, thinking of race day, Bob, this importance, like I'm just even thinking of the clothes you wear on race day.
Oh,
if you're
going
to bring your own nutrition, for example, like where are you stashing that thing or those things? Or if you're using on course aid, practicing with that stuff that you're going to grab from aid. I mean, it's just a huge area I see as errors by marathoners repeatedly. And it's like, if we could just get a little more proactive there, it saves so much of that brain drain on race day, trying to figure that stuff out in the moment.
And even to that point, Dean, even replicating your pre-marathon race day breakfast in some of your training runs, like that's the lowest hanging fruit. When a marathoner comes up to me and says, "Hey, what should I eat for breakfast in the morning before my training runs?" Well, my answer is, well, what are we planning on before the marathon? Because that's what we want to figure out. And that's what we want to replicate every single training run once we know it works well for you. Because again, you're taking the brain out of it a little bit. You're going on autopilot, but you're also training your digestive system.
Exactly. That's a good, mistake number three. Mistake number four is what happens after the run.
Oh, yes.
What is going on? Mistake number four.
To have a beer or not have a beer.
Okay, yeah. I was going to use an example of the gut bomb refuel, you know?
But well, okay, yeah, let's take it back a little bit. Like back in the days, right? It used to be you've got to have a 4-to-1 ratio, carbohydrate to protein. Mm-hmm. You've got to plug those carbs, those simple sugars as quickly as possible because you need to refill your gas tank. And I'm talking about muscle glycogen or muscle carbohydrates, right? So that was then. And it's kind of morphed a little bit these days. It's not as aggressive as the 4-to-1, but you know, the whole alcohol, I brought up the beer thing, Dina, because that's always come up in athlete discussions, like, oh, well, beer is carbohydrate. Like, can I just replenish my carbohydrate stores? That's a whole different episode. But here's my take on what do you consume after a training run? And remember, let's put this all in context. When you're running or doing any type of training, you're trying to improve your body's physiological adaptations to improve one day or one week after the other, right? So keep that in mind. You don't want to put something in your body that would hamper that. So I believe it's context. I believe there's a time and a place for maximizing glycogen, for putting some simple sugars in your body after a hard run or long run. But I also believe there's a time and a place for balancing your carbohydrate and protein, staying more metabolically efficient and supporting the fat oxidation or fat burning response. And what does it all come down to? Well, not all come down to, but one of the main things is, what are your goals? What are your goals for training? What are your goals for racing? What are your goals for health, right? I mean, there are a lot of contextual things we need to think about in terms of how do you feed after training.
I'm thinking of the Bob Sibahar mantra, eat to train.
Eat to train. That's right.
You know, and thinking of this, it's not just I burned X calories, so now let's just replace with whatever random calories. There's a little more thought, intention, specificity behind it, as you just mentioned, with the goals that we each have from training, adaptation, health, all of the things. Of course, we want to honor hunger as well, but I mean, it's not just a simple formula that you follow. There's a little more to it in that post-exercise window. Not try and complicate things by any means, but it's like, I just think of it as this opportunity window of time. Like the trick is for still happening.
Yeah. And I think it's, you know, it's important, and not many people realize this, and mostly because I haven't really discussed it much, but there are actually two different nutrient timing strategies, right? There's the traditional one that we always talk about. That's what I call the glycogen maximization. That's the put as many carbs in your body as possible after training so you refill your gas tank, right? So that's strategy one. We always talk about that one. Strategy two is the metabolic efficiency one. So I kind of mentioned this, but you kind of have to think, well, what am I trying to accomplish? So here's a good example of this. If you're going to go out for a morning run, and let's call it hour to 2 hour run. Okay. Could be on the track, could be hill repeats, just could be an aerobic run. So it's in the morning, and we're not going to get into any major specifics like fasted, or like just that's going to complicate things. But when you come back, you have to think about, when is my next training session? If your next training session is that very day, and that training session is important, meaning high quality, you better put some carbohydrates in your body, back in your body pretty quickly, right? Because your body needs those carbohydrates and you need to fill up the gas tank quickly. But if your next training session isn't till tomorrow morning, just under 24 hours later, maybe you don't have to rush a lot of simple sugar carbohydrates coming back in your body, because here's the thing that not a lot of people know, Dina. your body can restore its carbohydrate storage in 16 to 24 hours just by following a normal, what I call metabolically efficient nutrition plan. We're not talking low carb, high fat. We're not talking ketogenic because those don't have a lot of carbs. I'm just talking more of a normalized blood sugar controlling nutrition plan. So I do feel like what you put in your body after training is kind of predicated on when your next training session is and what your next training session is. So that's my rule of thumb. If you have a training session in over 16 to 24 hours, you don't have to rush a lot of simple sugars coming in your body. If you have a training session under 16 hours, again, after the first one, then yeah, you need some rapid glycogen replenishment.
And then we could throw in a little bit of the protein piece here, Bob. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe for some athletes, for example, I might throw in like the women in peri-postmenopause who just need, or our master's athletes just needing higher daily protein anyway. Like, okay, after a long hard run or tempo run, maybe that window of time post-exercise, again, we could, you know, debate some of the timing issues from the research or the window of opportunity, but yeah, just getting in a good quality protein source after a run to help with our daily needs, help a bit with that recovery process. So that's a little bit kind of sort of separate from the glycogen conversation, yeah, even though there's some tie there
as
well.
But it's true. And that's actually the top recommendation in that post-exercise window is carbohydrate and protein intake. It's, yeah, the quote unquote rules are, well, if you don't have protein, then you need to eat more carbohydrates. I mean, time and place for that. But again, 99% of the time, you and I are promoting getting protein in that post-exercise window also. It's hugely important for many subgroups of many populations, right?
Very true. Very true. Yeah. Wowza, Bob. And we present these four mistake areas to you listeners for learning opportunities, not to like finger point anyone. It's just wanting to make the most of your training and your racing for the season ahead. So hopefully this is clicking with you. Of course, if you've got some curiosities or other questions, you can always drop us a note over at hello@insidesportsnutrition.com. Let us know what you're training for and what's going on with your marathon adventures. We'll be sure to expand on this topic with some other sport-specific areas here in upcoming episodes. For now, Bob, we're going to let our listeners head on to the rest of their day. Thank you guys for being here with us, and we'll catch you on the next episode.
Well, we hope you enjoyed episode 123, where Dina and I sat down and talked about some popular nutrient timing mistakes that marathoners make. Hopefully you got a few golden nuggets from that. Stay tuned for next week's episode, where we sit down with Leighton Phillips, who is the founder of S-Fuels. Now, if you've never heard of this company, I wouldn't be surprised, but they provide some really interesting products to endurance athletes that are so much in line with metabolic efficiency, it's really not even funny. So we have a great discussion, not only about Leighton's background, but also the why behind forming S-Fuels and the different products. Now, these products are very interesting because they're not just, you know, simple sugars, throw in a few salts, sugars, whatever in there. There are very clinically supported ingredients that you'll definitely want to learn about. And this is a really fun talk we have with him. And I'm sure we're going to have him back on some future episodes. Now, if you do have a sport nutrition related question about anything, or if you want us to review a product that you're interested in or that you've been using, just send us an email, hello@insidesportsnutrition.com. And we would love to hear back from you. Now, if you would also like to head on over to our website, insidesportsnutrition.com, you can check out all of our show notes, some of the discounts we have and stuff going on with us. We would just love for you to just also help us spread the word and the love of our podcast. So tell all your friends, family, and training partners, head on over to your favorite podcast platform of choice. Give us a 5-star rating. We would just love you to submit more of this positive energy with any type of review that you can provide us. Now, if you would like to learn more about what Dina and I do in our respective businesses, head on over to nutritionmechanic.com. That is Dina's website. And head on over to energyperformance.com, E-N-R-G-performance.com. And that is my website. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are solely those of the host and the guests involved and do not represent a replacement for medical consultation with your doctor. The information and opinions provided here are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease or medical condition. This podcast is for information, education, and entertainment purposes only.